This episode of Stage 9 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM's show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
That's Parsec award-winning John to you.
Oh, it is. Yes, thank you. Yes. That for aggressive negotiations, an award shared with Matthew Rushing. So thank you. I personally think that everybody deserved it more than me. So,
Nah. That's not true. No.
It is true.
No.
It is true.
No.
No.
You're a good podcaster. And
Thank you.
Are very deserving. And, you know, I'm very honored to podcast with you. I've never podcasted with a Parsec Award winner before. So I'm just going to take
nothing
my
is different except now I insist during shows you refer to me as Sir. That is, you know, I'm Sir John.
All right, Sir John. Yes. I can do that. So today, Sir John and I are going to be discussing Quentin Tarantino's third movie, or third and 3.25 movie, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, close enough.
Jackie Brown. Yeah.
Yes.
Which was released on December 25th, 1997. It just celebrated its 20th anniversary. And, you know, I was thinking about this. I think that it's not a stretch to say that December of 1997 may be the best month for movies in history.
Okay, obviously I don't know, I don't have quite the memory. So what else came out in December of 1997 that would make you think that?
Well, Titanic is the big one.
Oh, gosh, yes, okay.
Good Will Hunting.
That's pretty solid.
Tomorrow Never Dies. Hmm. Oh, come on, that movie's awesome. As Good as It Gets.
Oh my gosh, that came out in 97?
Yeah, it did. I know that for a fact because I remember going to the sneak preview of As Good as It Gets when I could have gone to see Boogie Nights, which was playing at the exact same theater. And it's one of the biggest mistakes of my life.
Well, now I'm curious, where do you fall with As Good as It Gets? Because I enjoyed As Good as It Gets, but I had a friend who absolutely fell in love with it and went nuts for it, and I didn't approach that level. Where did you fall on the scale?
I liked it. I liked it a lot when I saw it, and I like it a lot less now. I don't know. It's fine. You know, it's a little, you know, cliche and stuff like that. But I think that, you know, Helen Hunt is really great in it. And and so is, Jack Nicholson and all that good stuff. But, yeah, I mean, this month was insane. Scream 2, Amistad, Home Alone 3. I didn't even know that they released that in theaters. Okay.
See, Home Alone 3 and Scream 2 go against your thesis, but go on.
Scream 2 is great.
No, it's
Wag
not.
The Dog.
Oh, gosh, I didn't care for that.
Oh, that movie's great.
No.
Kundun. No. Afterglow. Afterglow was awesome.
I never saw it.
The Postman.
Come on.
I've never seen The Postman, actually.
My friend... I constantly made fun of it for weeks afterward, where we'd be like saying goodbye. You know, it's like, hey, I'll catch you later. I'll talk to you, you know, later this week or something like that. And he would just turn around and go, ride, postman, ride.
I really want to see it because I hear that Tom Petty is in it as himself.
He is. He is. Okay. Well, they never say that he's himself, but there's a sly reference where Kevin Costner says, you know, didn't you used to be somebody? And he says, I did, but I'm not now. So
that's good. That's good. Yeah. Also, Deconstructing Harry and An American Werewolf in Paris. So there you go. Pretty good list.
It's a decent list. It's a decent list.
And on that list, I would probably put Jackie Brown at number two.
Well, because you said, Boogie Nights was released before December.
Yeah, right? That was released October 10th, 1997.
Okay.
Yeah.
Of the ones that I've seen in that group, Jackie Brown is at the top.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do, in fact, like this better than Titanic. And I'm not a Titanic basher. Okay. I'm not one of those people that bashes Titanic. Trust me, I'm not. But I liked Jackie Brown more.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane to think that there is a month in which Jackie Brown is released and it's not the best movie of the month, you know.
Right.
But I mean, that's how I feel. But regardless, Jackie Brown is an amazing movie. So we're going to talk about it right now.
Yes.
So, okay, here's the thing, right? Like, this is 1997, so it had been a little over 3 years since Tarantino had come out with Pulp Fiction and set the world on fire. You know, Four Rooms, as we discussed last week, didn't exactly, you know, blow people away. And I think a lot of people don't really count it as one of his movies or anything like that. But Jackie Brown is the one that everyone was looking forward to. And, you know, this was the first one that I saw in the theater. And I'm guessing that you probably saw it in the theater as well, right?
I did. Yes, I did.
Okay. So it was 3 years after Pulp Fiction. You're already a Tarantino fan, hardcore, not hardcore enough to go see Four Rooms, but whatever. So, so what was it like for you leading up to Jackie Brown?
I was excited for it. I still remember the ads. I still remember, like, rewatching it this time. I remember the shots that were in the ads, and I remember there was an alternate shot of Sam Jackson coming out from behind a corner where they used a different take in the film. And I remember, even at the time, saying like, oh no, this was a different, there was a different shot in the trailer, in the original trailer for this. It's the scene where he sees Robert Forster walking through the mall.
Okay.
In the original trailer, there was a different shot of him coming around the corner. It was a closer shot. If I'm recalling correctly. Anyway. So I was hyped for it. I was excited for it. The aftermath reaction was not what I expected it to be, though. It was disorienting because everybody was on the Pulp Fiction train, and Jackie Brown seems to be where people started jumping off of that train pretty quickly in my circle of friends. How was it for you?
Well, for me, you know, having just discovered Tarantino about a year prior or a little over a year prior, you know, this was like, I was super, super excited for this, you know, and it was one of those things where, you know, everyone who I was, you know, going to school with was also super excited about it because, you know, it was for a lot of us, you know, I was 17 years old when the movie came out. For a lot of us, this was the first time that we could ever experience a Tarantino movie on the big screen. It's the first time that we were actually there for the you know, opening day. And you know, like most of my interactions with people were in the TV studio at high school, where I would spend most of my time. And in particular, my friend Tony was a really big Pulp Fiction fan, and just like me. And he was really, really excited about Jackie Brown. And I remember bonding with him over that, where I was telling everyone that I thought Titanic was going to be amazing, and they told me that I was, you know, a moron for thinking that, you know. And we were just about to go on, you know, winter break, and, you know, then come back a couple weeks later having all experienced these movies. So for me, I was full on into Titanic world, you know, for this entire period of time. But I was taking little trips to various other places in the world of cinema, like, you know, with Tomorrow Never Dies and Jackie Brown. I remember Jackie Brown and Good Will Hunting came out on the same day, Christmas Day, which was very strange. And I totally lucked out because, as we discussed last week, you know, my mom wasn't going to let me see a movie on Christmas Day. But on December 26th, I went to the first, you know, show of Jackie Brown at the Lake Theater, and it was playing on in theater number 2, which was the big, old, grand, beautiful theater. And then the next day, I went to see Good Will Hunting, and apparently Good Will Hunting started like kicking Jackie Brown's butt at the lake because they had flipped theaters. And then I got to see Good Will Hunting in theater number 2, which was the big old grand theater there. So that was kind of nice in a way, although I don't understand why Jackie Brown wasn't doing better. But I guess here's my question. So that's the lead up. Lots and lots of hype, you know, coming off of, you know, the movie that changed movies. What was your reaction to seeing Jackie Brown?
I loved it. I found myself on an island because I came out of it saying, I think this is as good as Pulp Fiction, if not maybe even a little better. And there were friends of mine who very much disagreed with me. And I was bewildered because I was like, what do you not see in this? There was everything about it. And, you know, I won't lie. There's a small emotional hook that it gets me on even to this day, because the very first song that it opens with is Across 110th Street by Bobby Womack. I will tell the most truncated version of the story that I can, because I'm sure I've recounted it previously somewhere else or whatever. But like, I got introduced to the theme from Shaft in my high school life. And it was, you know, everybody was like making fun of it, like, ah, ha, ha, ha. And I wound up in a CD store. In the cutout bin was an album produced by Ice-T called Pimps, Players, and Private Eyes. And it had the theme from Shaft on it. So I was like, oh, yes. And I bought it because it's the theme from Shaft. And that was the going joke with everybody. And on it, it was basically a collection of 10 songs, themes from blaxploitation movies. And I wound up falling in love with the genre because it opened with Across 110th Street. It had the theme song from Superfly by Curtis Mayfield. Like, it actually wound up opening the door to all of this stuff. And so I sit down and Jackie Brown, and Across 110th Street strikes up. And I was like, yes, this is one of the greatest songs ever. People were like, what are you talking about? I was like, no, it's all across, you know. So it was just, I think I was just primed and ready for this. And I think that, you know, if I were to play armchair psychiatrist, I think it caught a lot of people off guard, because Pulp Fiction has a very specific, you know, identity to it. And Jackie Brown is not that. Jackie Brown is a fairly straightforward story. It's like, I was actually talking about this with somebody else. You have Get Shorty comes out around the same time. They're both based on an Elmer Leonard novel. And it's fascinating because you see what two different directors do with source material from the same author, and the wildly different but equally fun results that they both have with it. So, yeah.
Yeah, Elmer Leonard was like the king of Hollywood at this particular point in time. Everyone was adapting everything. I remember when Get Shorty came out, a lot of people were comparing it to Pulp Fiction because it had that sort of like, you know, fun, you know, witty dialogue in a sort of like, you know, crime setting, you know, but it wasn't really like super dark or anything like that. And of course, you know, the reason for the similarities, I think, is because, as, you know, Tarantino has said on many occasions, Elmore Leonard's novels were one of his biggest influences when it came to writing. So, you know, yeah, Pulp Fiction is basically him ripping off Elmore Leonard, and it only makes sense that, you know, when it comes time to do an adaptation, he adapts an Elmore Leonard book. And you're right about the whole, you know, thing in terms of like directing and seeing how, you know, people adapt, you know, source material. And, you know, there's another movie which comes after this, which I think is an even stronger comparison, which is Out of Sight, because Out of Sight, directed by Soderbergh, actually, you know, Elmore Leonard being, you know, cool and everything, his characters, you know, exist in a shared universe, right? And one of the characters from both the book Rum Punch, which Jackie Brown is based on, and Out of Sight is Ray Nicolette. And, you know, Ray Nicolette, he appears in Jackie Brown, played by Michael Keaton. Yeah. And while Jackie Brown was being shot, Out of Sight was being prepped by Steven Soderbergh. And this character, Ray Nicolette, is in it. And, you know, they were discussing casting, and they're like, oh, you know, Tarantino, he cast Michael Keaton. You know, that kind of makes sense. I think that would be good. I think that we should cast Michael Keaton, you know? So called up Tarantino, and he's like, hey, I'm thinking about casting Michael Keaton as the same character that you cast him in this. But I don't know if that's a good idea or not. And Tarantino's like, come on over to the editing room and you can watch his scenes. So Soderbergh went over, watched the Jackie Brown scenes with Michael Keaton, and was like, yep, that's what we want to do. So this is one of the very few, maybe the only instance, where two separate movies made by two separate studios and two completely separate filmmakers both have the same character in them played by the same actor. And they came out like 8 months apart.
That is pretty darn wild.
It's awesome. And that, I mean, to me, like, you know, I mean, I always love watching Jackie Brown and Out of Sight back to back, because it's a really, really great double feature. And Keaton is great in both movies, even if it is just kind of
I'm going to have to check out Out of Sight now.
You've never seen it?
No, I've never seen it.
Oh,
you've chastised me for it before. You have chastised me for it before. Oh.
I just put on the Laserdisc the other day. It's so good. So good.
Okay.
If you like Jackie Brown, you'll like Out of Sight.
Okay. Well, the thing is, I love Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
I think that I've made it sort of a hobby, and I've changed my estimate from time to time of when did Sam Jackson start phoning it in. And I'm always curious when I go back and I watch his past works. I'm like, at what point did Sam Jackson start phoning it in? Not here. Definitely not here. I'm really beginning to become more and more convinced that it's just as soon as he got that fat Disney cash, he was like, yeah, okay, I'm good. I'm Nick Fury. I'm just going to yell at some people. That's cool.
I haven't seen Sam Jackson phone it in yet. I don't know what you're talking about.
I would say that you could make the argument that there are some appearances in the Marvel movies where it's literally just, you know, yeah, just give me my eye patch. Yeah, okay, I'll say my lines and I just walk off.
What about Winter Soldier?
I'm not saying he's that way. I'm not saying he's that way in the Winter Soldier. I'm just saying that with some of the Marvel stuff, it shows. It shows.
I don't think I don't agree with that. I don't know what you're talking about there.
I said not Winter Soldier. Maybe Iron Man 2.
They botched his introduction in Iron Man 2. That's the problem with that one. Yeah.
Well, there were a lot of problems with Iron Man 2. So
anyway.
Well, either way, I think that this is, I know that Forster got, because we were talking about this with Pulp Fiction, like Tarantino's getting his reputation for resurrecting people's careers. Forster is brought back from the acting wilderness, as it were. Pam Grier is brought and given a lead role, and you can tell that like Tarantino has become a director everybody wants to work with, because he gets De Niro in a supporting role, he gets Keaton in it. Well, I mean, Keaton's trying to, you know, come back out of the wilderness after the Batman exile that he had, and you know, so like you see more names showing up in the film.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you know, it's really interesting because like, yes, he loves De Niro, and yes, he loves Keaton and everything, but he loves, you know, Forster and Pam Grier just as much. I mean, clearly, this entire movie, I mean, it was altered from the source material in some pretty massive ways, you know, from what I understand, in order to make it, you know, an homage to blaxploitation films. And casting, you know, Pam Grier in that was incredibly intentional. You know, I mean, they did a thing when Hateful Eight came out, the Music Box here in Chicago did a thing where it was like a Tarantino influences festival, where they showed a bunch of Tarantino movies, but they paired them with a bunch of movies which were influences to him. And for example, you know, I saw a double feature of Foxy Brown and Jackie Brown, and you know, that was pretty cool. Although Foxy Brown, not that good of a movie.
You know what though? That's the thing is, and I've become over the years a fan of the blaxploitation films, not by the same road that I knew plenty of people that went that way because it was, you know, it was, oh, we're going to make fun of them. But for me, it was always about, and I suspect this is a similar sort of thing for a lot of people. There's such an unbridled enthusiasm for making film in that genre that even when it's bad, like say, let's take Blackula. Blackula is a bad movie. It's a bad movie from beginning to finish, but you see and feel this enthusiasm in front of and behind the camera where somebody was like, I'm going to make a movie and it's going to have, you know, people like me in the lead and as the main characters. And we're going to make this something we can watch and enjoy. And it's like, there's a real, you know, you can go all the way down to Black Belt Jones, which is arguably as bad as The Room. And you wind up loving it because there's this infectious air about it of like, just, you know, people that are just thrilled to be making a movie. It's like, that's kind of cool, man.
Yeah, you know, I've never really thought of, you know, that as like a genre where you make fun of the movies. I don't know. I mean, some of them are bad, you know, but like, I mean, you look at like Shaft, like that movie is awesome, you know?
Shaft has one of the greatest exchanges. I don't know how it would be viewed in today's mindset or anything, but I don't know if I've ever referenced it before, but there, you know, there's a specific scene where the white detective says to Shaft as he's walking away, he says, "Where the hell you going, Shaft?" And he turns around, "Get laid. Where the hell you going?" And he just starts walking off laughing. It's one of my favorite exchanges in the history of film because I laugh for like 5 minutes afterward. It was great.
It's great. And by the way, Shaft, you know, written by Star Trek writer John D.F. Black, who we interviewed on commentary Trek Stars, and who told us about Shaft, about making Shaft and everything like that, you know, and it's such a great movie, such great dialogue and all that stuff. And, you know, Jackie Brown, I think, really kind of taps into that. You know, it's really interesting looking at this movie through the Star Trek lens, you know, and the Tarantino, you know, making Star Trek lens, because this is his only straight up adaptation of, you know, other material, which you can kind of like see the parallels there, obviously, since he's jumping into this franchise and, you know, trying to make it his own. And what does that mean? And there's a lot of people who say like, well, Tarantino's view of the world is different from Star Trek's or whatever. But I keep on thinking about the liner notes for the DVD, which were written by Elmore Leonard, where he talks about how even though a substantial amount of the movie has changed, you know, from, you know, the name of the book to the race of the main character to, you know, everything else in the movie, the time frame, you know, everything like that. Even with all those changes, in these liner notes, Elmore Leonard says that he considers Jackie Brown to be the most faithful adaptation of any of his books ever made. And I think that that's fascinating and really interesting and really kind of speaks to what it is that Tarantino is doing here and, you know, what it is we can probably expect from him with Star Trek. You know, yes, he's going to make it Tarantino. He's going to make it his own. But in doing so, even if on the surface it appears to be something different, he's going to maintain that essence, you know, and still make it true to what Star Trek is at its core, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree, obviously. And, you know, it's staying true to, you know, those sorts of themes. If he's looking at the original crew, that was a crew that dealt with contemporary difficult issues and, you know, all of that sort of thing. And it's, you know, something though that I fixated on this time as I was watching it was, you know, we've mentioned, you know, he's coming off of Pulp Fiction. He's got all of this heat coming on him. He's, you know, they're releasing this, you know, same time as Titanic and all of these other things. Nowadays, especially when we have the big franchise machines, we have Marvel, we have Star Wars as a franchise machine now, we have, you know, all the different Disney properties, we have the Warner Brothers DC movies, we have all of these sorts of things. And these directors come along and they get some, you know, hot attention on them, and they get pulled up from the minors, and they're here's your big chance, kid. I really fear that I hope we haven't lost something where Tarantino gets all of this Oscar love for Pulp Fiction and all of this, you know, adulation and all of these new fans and huge success. And he makes his next film about two middle-aged people involved in crime, two obscure non-marquee actors as his leads, and he has a passionate kiss between, again, it's an interracial middle-aged couple. Like, who does that anymore? You know, I'm sure there are people who do it, but this is a guy who, high profile, said, I'm not going to just come up here and start playing the game and cast, you know, like, I can easily see this movie being cast and the studio note coming back saying, no, we want Jackie to be a little bit younger. And we think Max Cherry, maybe he doesn't need to be a bail bondsman. Maybe he could be an attorney, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, I want more Tarantinos on the scene, man, because I want more Jackie Browns. I want somebody to come up and be like, you know what, these leads aren't going to be who you expect them to be, and I got the clout, and I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah, it's hard, you know. Tarantino is a unique case where he's had so many hits that he basically is given a blank check. I mean, we talked about how, you know, for his upcoming movie about the Manson murders, you know, he had studios auditioning for him to see who he was going to let pay for his new movie, you know, who he was going to let give him money. But, you know, it's a lot harder for a lot of other people. I mean, you know, we just, you know, we're talking about, I was just talking about, as I always am, Paul Thomas Anderson, and how, you know, like The Master, you know, there was a huge gap between There Will Be Blood and The Master, and the reason for that was because it took him forever to get money for The Master. And, you know, he's someone who's not willing to compromise that vision. He's someone who doesn't, you know, take jobs like, you know, Star Wars movies just for the paycheck or whatever. He, you know, waits it out, and you know, every time he makes a movie, it's his movie, which, you know, it's really hard to do. It's even hard to do for someone like Paul Thomas Anderson, who, you know, is consistently nominated for Oscars. So, you know, I understand why people don't do it, but it's nice to have someone like Tarantino who can, for sure. And, yeah. And you know, like you're saying with the casting and sort of like resisting that urge and you know, all that stuff. I mean, this is something that I was just listening to a podcast with Paul Thomas Anderson, and he says, like, whenever he's trying to get funding for his movie, the two questions that he always gets asked are, who's in it and how much does it cost, right? And, you know, I'm sure that that question was asked of Tarantino here. Who's in it? You know, Pam Grier and Robert Forster. And, you know, Tarantino, and this, I mean, I don't know, this just speaks to, I mean, how cool he is in a lot of ways, I guess. But, you know, after Pulp Fiction comes out and everything, Robert De Niro, you know, calls him up and is like, hey, you know, I read this, your script for Jackie Brown. I really loved it. I want to be in the movie. You know, I think I could be really good as Max Cherry. And Tarantino said to him, like, that's great. You know, I'm really glad to hear it, but I already promised the role to Robert Forster. You know, I essentially wrote it for him, and, you know, I can't take that away from him now. But you can be in it as this random stoner side character. And then De Niro's like, okay, sure, I'll do that.
And Lewis is, I love Lewis. He's great. I love the way that he has there's the one scene with Ordell and Jackie where they're arguing on the balcony. And you don't, like, this is another thing I love. It's like the camera doesn't follow them. You hear them through the window, and you're left to sit there with De Niro you know, with Lewis as he's like looking around, like trying to decide, should I leave? Can I let them know I can hear them? What am I supposed, you know, like stuck, like the, because we can all relate to that where it's like, I'm on the couch and something's happening and I don't know where to go or what to do with my hands right now, you know?
Yep. Yep.
So yeah, it's just a beautiful thing.
He's great. Everybody's great. Bridget Fonda in this movie, I think Bridget Fonda is like this movie's secret weapon. You know, she's so good.
And she has, she is the first instance for Tarantino to really devote some screen time to his love of feet.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Very much so. Yes. that'll be a recurring theme.
And talking about the camera work, you know, this movie was shot by Guillermo Navarro, who we discussed briefly last week. But Navarro, like we were talking about, he photographed the pilot for Star Trek Discovery. So, you know, great camera work here too, you know, very different style from Discovery, you know, very much sort of Tarantino-y, you know, shot on film, of course, and everything. But gorgeous photography here, you know, as is as it is in Discovery. And one other Star Trek connection, if you look closely in one scene, the courtroom scene, the public defender is played by Denise Crosby. So there you go. Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
Maybe an early nod to his love for Yesterday's Enterprise back before, you know, he went public with it. I don't know.
Knowing Tarantino, probably.
I mean, he obviously knows who Denise Crosby is. And, you know, you got to think that, you know, even if she did audition for it, he was like, hey, that's Tasha Yar, you know?
Probably.
Pretty cool. So any final thoughts on Jackie Brown?
If you haven't seen it, you should. That's it. It is spellbinding. Even rewatching it this time, I just couldn't take my eyes off the screen.
Agreed. When I first saw it, I have to say I mean I loved it the first time I saw it, but at the same time I was definitely disappointed. I was looking for something which was on the level of Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, and I didn't find it. Although over the years, you know, and watching it more and more, I've come to appreciate it more and more. And now it's one of my absolute favorite Tarantino movies. I think it's better than Reservoir Dogs. And I think that it's very close to being a masterpiece, you know, as are many, many of his movies. So I highly, highly recommend it. I don't know whether part of that is just because I'm getting older and I can relate to these characters more or whatever. But whatever the reason, I really, really do love this movie. So definitely check it out. All right. Well, it's been fun talking about Jackie Brown this week, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
I actually hadn't watched the show, I'm embarrassed to say, but I sat down and I started watching and recording episodes, and I immediately had an idea for a script because I found Data to be the most interesting character.
To the journey!
So you could have, like, you know, carbonated gog.
Carbonated gog? I'm trying to understand how this works. So the gawk are presumably a little squishy or juicy on the inside. So you're saying that in order to give them the appearance of life, they replicate it with carbonation inside the gawk.
Yes, to make them like pop and fizz. Kind of like an Alka-Seltzer, you know?
Like pop fizz. Candy gawk.
Warp 5.
And I go into the job interview, and I'm just parroting back to him things he said in his interviews. But he didn't know that I was just doing that. I would say, thing about Star Trek is that you could write a mystery one week, and a Western the next week, and I'm literally word for word things he said in an interview. So that's how I always feel, and I joke with him now that that's how I got the job. But
the 602 Club.
When we're talking about the idea of context in history, I think this is the biggest issue that I see in this film, and with the Force Awakens too. And you put them together because they're going to make a trilogy. Is look. Writing 101, if you don't know the past and the future of your characters, you absolutely 100% cannot write their present.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
check out all these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app, and get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please, leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to find us is to join the larger conversation in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and we should come right up on Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email, you can contact us through our website. Just go to trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Stage 9. That'll come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at Trek FM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me as Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice. You can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And you can find me over on thenerdparty.com co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Matthew Rushing and Great Shot Kid with you.
Yeah, that Parsec award-winning Aggressive Negotiations over there.
Oh, stop it.
All right. You can find me on thenerdparty.com doing the Great Shot Kid, and you can find me on my website, commentarytrackstars.com, doing a show called Commentary Track Stars, and you can find me right here on trek.fm doing a show called The Edge, and you can also find me on Twitter at mumbles3k. We'd like to thank our associate producers today, Chris Steftenagel, Jeff Sutter, and Norman C. Lau. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you'd like to be like Chris, Jeff, and Norm, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and become a patron of the network. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, you can get all the details, including perks like early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. All right. Well, that's Jackie Brown in the books. Next week. Oh boy.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth film by Quentin Tarantino.
Yes.
Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair.